You heard of our greatest factions of all time episode. Here's a new one we're coming up with today. What is the best NXT call-up that WWE completely botched? We're not giving it to you yet until you stick around. Stay tuned. New episode of the Wrestling Guys podcast starting right now. All right, coming to you from the Forgotten Borough, Staten Island, New York. This is the Wrestling Guys podcast. This is the fans' perspective on all things in the world of WWE and the world of professional wrestling. We are your hosts. I'm Eric, otherwise known as Fizz. With me, as always, my tag team partner, Chris, not in love with Dexter Lumis. That's the indie. Never miss. big topic on board today, starting something nice and fresh. Summertime is upon us. We're having a good time. So we're going to have to clink to seal the deal and get right into the show. That's for all of you guys out there. Hope you guys are enjoying a summer beverage. I, on one hand, I'm having a coffee so I don't pass out. I don't know. It feels like people are just like, it feels like, you know, when you go to lay down and it feels like somebody is literally holding your eyelid shut. And I'm doing it over the camera now. He can see it. And I literally couldn't wake up on Monday. Sat down, started to watch Raw. And it literally felt like, and Raw wasn't boring. Didn't put me to sleep. It just felt like somebody was literally sitting and just covering my eyelid. I couldn't keep it closed. So you know? Like that the last couple of days. Been incredibly tired. But
sounds like you've had a lot going on.
And, you know, summertime, you know, off in the summer.
A lot of activities.
We're making up for lost time. You know, last year, they didn't do a ton of stuff because of COVID. The benefit of being off for the summer is that you could do these things. And then the down part of it is that you don't know what day it is. Like, I barely know today is Thursday. I barely knew we were going to record last week. And I'm like, I didn't even know today was Thursday. It was Wednesday. So it just, you know. That's a happy forgetfulness, I guess. It's a happy down thing. But still, it's weird to, like, get all your ducks in a row. But eventually, you know, you got to just settle down a little bit. So we're just playing it cool. It's been fun. It's been great. Yeah, I can't complain. It's a happy complaint, you know. You can't do it well. I did go the route of you. I officially cut the cord on cable and went nice. YouTube TV, which is actually pretty great. I'm a big fan.
We use it here, and actually, as we're recording, I just have the Olympics on in the background. But I enjoy YouTube TV, and it's cable is obsolete. It's expensive for no reason, and I just don't see a purpose for it anymore.
So. Remind me the story I could tell you about why I got rid of cable in the first place. It's funny as hell, but it's right now I'm enjoying it just because I'm able to not having to delete shows. To watch wrestling shows is incredible. I just had it. It's good. And I was able to catch up. There is a point to the story. I'm not just rambling. I was able to catch up on the latest episodes of AEW, Fyter Fest Night 2, and the most recent one this past Wednesday. And they were anchored, main evented, by two death matches consecutive in a row. The Texas death match with Moxley and Archer for the IWGP US title, which I enjoyed. I thought it was good. I know Eric Bischoff said he wasn't a fan of it, didn't really like it. And then this past Wednesday with the second Labor of Jericho, when it was a pretty much a no rules match. It was a death match. They didn't want to call it a death match, but I don't know why. But it was Jericho against MDK all day. Nick Gage, just fresh off his Dark Side of the Ring episode and stuff like that. And I just find it weird. I was texting you a few hours ago, actually, prior to us texting, doing the show. I was like, one, I liked the Archer Moxley match. I did not like the Jericho Nick Gage match at all, and I don't know why, but what stuck in my head was I texted you and was like, I'm surprised they allowed this to be on TV. Not that it was violent, it wasn't good.
Yeah, it really wasn't good, and it just goes to show, and you know, I'm sure, you know, some of the listeners, those who listen to us, might give us some flack about this, but it just goes to show why Nick Gage is a backyard indie deathmatch wrestler. You could tell that he was completely out of his element, especially in there with someone like Jericho. And this was more of a service to him, probably because of the Dark Side of the Ring stuff. And, you know, Jon Moxley appeared on some GCW show, I think it was. Nick Gage actually lost his title to Zack Ryder, or formerly Zack Ryder. You know, but his appearance on AEW, I just think was a service to him to kind of give him a little bit of shine. But the match was not good. I mean, and the only time it got even a little bit entertaining was, of course, the fluorescent light bulbs and the, you know, the pizza cutter and the plate glass, but just overall the match was just, it was a stinker of a match. And one thing that I was kind of surprised about was I didn't see when they announced the match between him and Nick Gage, but as I watched the match and Nick Gage is coming out, he came out after Jericho. Of course, with the AEW type of audience, I expected a huge pop, and there was none of that for him.
It wasn't. The crowd wasn't really into it, not into it, but there wasn't as big as a response as it was last week when they announced that he would be there.
Right. So it just brought me back to what John Moxley had said on that Dark Side of the Ring episode. He was like, oh, Vince McMahon would kill to have someone like Nick Gage who connects with an audience. It's like the audience acted like they didn't give a shit about him, at least from what I saw.
I don't know who he is. I know about him because of Dark Side of the Ring. Maybe that's my own ignorance because I don't follow the deathmatch scene and stuff like that.
Right.
But
yeah.
If he came out in AEW and I never watched that episode, I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? I would be Googling him as I'm watching the match.
Yeah, you know, I just think that
maybe a lot of those people didn't know who he was, and that's realistic.
Yeah, but I also think that with the AEW crowd, who's all about, you know, anti WWE and the indie scene and all that stuff, they acted like even they didn't know who he was. Like there wasn't a whole lot of chance for him. There wasn't a whole lot.
I would put money on that they didn't.
Right,
they didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
And the reason why I bring both of these up, because I just find it weird that in back-to-back weeks they do death matches as their main event. The Moxley Archer at least has some type of story with it. They did it in Japan already. It's their second or third go-around. I think Archer took it off Moxley. Moxley got it back, and then Archer, you know. But there are just spots in these matches just for the sake of spots, you know.
Yeah.
The ending sequence where, you know, Moxley takes out a board of barbed wire with two tables and only for him to get chokeslammed off of it and lose. Okay, that happens in matches, you know. And you were right with the Jericho Gage thing. You know, they bring out a plate glass, just straight, just a pane of glass, light tubes. Jericho does like a nice Hurricane Rana off into the plate glass because I don't think he was taking the bump off of that shit. You know what I mean? You know, it's just those little things, you know, like, I'm so tired of seeing the fucking light tube thing, and I haven't seen many of them in my life. And you know, this is a guy who's coming from watching a lot of clips, not actually full matches. You know, it's just ridiculous, and the crowd's like yelling, holy shit, and there's blood everywhere. I'm just like, and it's not even, I could take the violence. I've seen plenty of hardcore matches and all that shit in my day. That doesn't compare. This is actually a lot more violent. But to me, it was just like, where's the story? If MJF said, like, well, I don't care if he loses, it's about causing him as much pain as possible. No, he kept saying on commentary, like, you know, Nick Gage doesn't win, the check doesn't clear. So he wanted him to win. So it's like, I don't know. And then for me, for it to be the second labor of Jericho, and I just said this before we started recording, for it to be the second labor of Jericho as a death match, like now every match has to go even further. Like if you're going to do a labor of Jericho, that should have been one of the last ones you do.
Yeah, I agree. And the next one is him versus Juventud Guerrero, who, man, I don't remember the last time I saw Hoovy wrestle. Maybe when he had a stint in TNA back when it started. But the stipulation of that is that in order for Jericho to win, he has to do a move off the top rope.
Yeah.
And it's so just like,
went from Hurricane Runners into a pane of glass, light tubes, getting stabbed, blood everywhere, too. All you have to do is a move off the top rope.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, I appreciate the, you know, the creativity in a way. But what I do, what it brings me to is all of this anti-WWE stuff and the criticism that they get for being boring and not creative, and yet you cheer this? Like, how is it any different?
You know, there's a lot of, and I don't know, I might be just being accused of being a WWE fanboy or biased, but it's like there's a lot of production issues within the AEW. AEW is not a perfect show. That's not saying, because we were just talking a few weeks ago about Raw not being perfect and everything, because there isn't.
Right.
But for the people that say up and down, this is why I watch AEW week, it's so much better than this. There's very, very good wrestling on it. But like, I think this might be a good concept for a show that we need to do, is to sit down and actually watch together a full episode of Dynamite and really pick it apart in the nuances,
yeah.
Match-wise, production-wise, backstage segment, promos, all that. Because in watching I watched two episodes back-to-back today. Last week's and last night's. This is Thursday, so as we're recording. And I noticed a lot of things. It's like Santana and Ortiz against FTR, which I love both tag teams. They had this nice little sit-down, almost press conference, and the cutting in that during that segment was so bad that it was like you could not get hyped up for this match. You know, they're up there, Santana Ortiz giving this is the building I grew up in, and this is the newspaper where I had to fight. My mom had to fight the city to so we can even have a place to live. And in the middle of him explaining it, they cut to FTR talking, and he's back sitting down. So they clearly cut from another scene to another that wasn't in sequence, and then they ended it. It's just like, I don't know.
Yeah, I still don't get when you see just what they're trying to do. You can give them credit for trying to be different, but when people say it's so much better, I still, to this point, don't see it. However, there's a lot of buzz around AEW right now, so that all might change as far as the landscape. With the news that may or may not be true, I kind of think it is, on who they signed, it might change things. It just might.
The landscape's definitely going to change. So the rumor is right now that both Daniel Bryan and CM Punk have both signed with AEW. So CM Punk hasn't wrestled for years. He had left famously after the Royal Rumble, you know, the Art of Wrestling podcast, went to court with the doctor that he, slandered or supposedly slandered. And he hasn't wrestled since. Daniel Bryan has just come off a match with Roman Reigns on SmackDown a few months ago, was in the main event of WrestleMania, and his contract expired. Mm-hmm. People are saying that he wanted to work in Japan. You know, he feels like he's at the end of his career. He wants to do some matches in Japan. He wants to do some matches in ROH with a lot of these guys because the indie wrestling scene is really picking up. There's a lot of quality guys out there. WWE was working on a partnership with New Japan. It fell through, and then that kind of paved the way, I guess, for him to sign with AEW, because in that deal, limited dates, probably a lot of money, and he's able to work in Japan and wherever else that he wants to work with. That's the rumor. CM Punk also, big money, he's coming in. They just announced that an AEW show is going to be in Chicago.
Yep.
They're already lining Rampage, up. I don't know if you noticed that, if you watched me watching the whole episode of Dynamite, there were just little references to CM Punk all night long. Darby Allin cut a backstage promo talking about being the greatest in the world. MJF at the very end, the Nick Gage match, tells Jericho, while you're sitting there, hopefully in as much pain as possibly can, which is a reference to the pipe bomb in the very beginning when he's talking about to John Cena. And Kenny Omega's just been dropping hints on Twitter everywhere. So unless they're just fucking with the audience and they sign somebody else, it seems like he's there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's definitely huge for AEW. And it should put WWE on notice a little bit as to be like, okay, because apparently Vince McMahon came out with some type of comment about how AEW is not even WCW as far as in the line of competition. But this draws – people are going to watch this with Daniel Bryan and CM Punk. Both going to AEW, people are going to tune in. And WWE should take notice of that and say, okay, this is big for them, and we have to make our product a little bit better because we might lose some viewership here.
I mean – it's definitely putting them on notice in terms of like, look, all right, now they come to play. They're signing these big guys. But the thing is, how do they use them?
Right.
Will they use them as well as you expect them to be used? Because if CM Punk or D-Bry is not in that world title picture immediately, you know that people are immediately going to call it a failure.
Yeah.
If they're part-time, that's their prerogative. But if they're not being used to the best of their ability during their part-time dates, people are going to label it a failure. And on top of that, their roster is getting incredibly bloated.
Yeah.
Andrade and now Aleister Malachi Black, if they sign both of these guys. And it just seems like every time someone gets cut, they're showing up on Dynamite.
Not to mention, or forget to mention, their partnership with New Japan and also Impact, and the guys that they have going back and forth from there, too.
I got to say, though, the Impact deal, the deal seems very one-sided in AEW's favor, because I never see no Impact guys on AEW television besides the Good Brothers.
Yeah.
And then all the AEW guys seem to be going over to Impact and kicking everybody's ass and doing their thing. You know what I mean? And I feel like that deal was just to get Gallows and Anderson with the Elite in AEW for some reason. The New Japan deal seems like, the winner of the Hikuleo and Archer match was Tanahashi in Japan. And Moxie cuts a promo backstage calling out Tanahashi. So maybe that they're setting something up there, too. So that's great for them. But that's more wrestlers that you're now having to market.
Right.
More feuds, more promos. And I mean, listen, they have that well, now it's their fourth show, right? Between Dark Elevation and now Rampage. So people are going to be working, but the people that you want to be featured probably aren't being featured. I mean, Christian was in a trios match that was very short this week, and he got signed to this big thing. And, you know, so far, and this is not knocking what they're doing, but so far, the way the major signing that they made a big deal about is not really translating on television to what it was.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to be one that just jumps all over them. It's like, they haven't done anything with this guy yet because, yeah, it's only been a couple of months. But how long before they're doing their own draft and splitting up the Rampage and Dynamite into two different shows? Because they're just really just signing a lot of people.
Yeah.
And they're losing that feel of we're different, because you had a lot of those guys like Santana Ortiz, the originals, Britt Baker, Nyla Rose, like all those people that started out are kind of, you know, are they going to fade into the background so now you can feature these ex-WWE guys because that's what people are already accusing you of, or you're going to try to do a 50-50 split? It's very, very, very touchy how they handle these next few months, especially if they signed who they supposedly signed.
Yeah, I mean, but I do have to say that, you know, seeing CM Punk's return is big. So we'll see what they do with it.
Yeah, as long as he doesn't, you know, get in his feelings and want to quit again.
Yeah, you know, I was one of the ones, I guess, that didn't appreciate as a fan the way he left the WWE. I thought it was very, it was like he threw a temper tantrum. It was like, I'm not getting what I want, so I'm leaving. But that's just my opinion.
Right. I see that too. That'd be another episode for another day. But there's a reason why I'm bringing this up. So because now, I was thinking about it the other day, and I saw and watching these shows today, seeing how Andrade's there and Malakai Black and FTR and all these guys are there now, and Brody Lee, rest in peace, who I signed over there as well. And then I see stuff like, you know, these recent round of cuts and the more recent round of cuts that are happening. You see these guys just kind of popping up everywhere and doing their own thing. And I'm like, man, you know, especially when Malakai Black debuted in Andrade, I'm like, damn, man, they really dropped the ball on some of these NXT guys. And I say this again because then you watch. So I thought personally, if you watch Money in the Bank, I thought Money in the Bank was really, really good this year. Mm-hmm. It was a really good pay-per-view from top to bottom. I thought it was fantastic. I thought they picked really good guy, a lady and a guy that won the Money in the Bank. And I thought the matches were just great. And then that Monday, it seems like maybe because of the return, John Cena came back, like the tide was shifting with Raw a little bit, and you saw Keith Lee come back. And I was like, wow, okay, he's been gone for months. I'm really, really hoping to hear his story, because he says he's going to come out in a week or two. I really hope to hear what's going on with him, but he immediately loses to Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley's the world champ. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
It's like he was setting up, because now they're returning Goldberg. Okay, fine. And then Karrion Kross debuted. He's still the NXT champion. He debuts with his entrance without Scarlett, which makes the entrance really awkward and weird.
Yeah.
Without her. It does. Yep.
You know, it does, yeah. It
doesn't fit when she's not going down and mouthing the words and coming out. It's weird. And he, who hasn't lost in NXT and is the NXT champion and has dominated everybody, loses to Jeff Hardy. It just boggled my mind why you would do that. You bring this guy up, he's the NXT champion, he loses in his first match on Raw. And I think I've said this before, how wins and losses, to me, they do count to an extent, but there is circumstantial. To me, no, you shouldn't have done that. Especially the program they have planned going forward in NXT. And then this week, they pair both Keith Lee and Karrion Kross together. Keith Lee loses again, tapping out. But then you heard reports that Karrion Kross was going to lose again to Jeff Hardy, but Jeff Hardy tested positive for COVID. So they couldn't do that this week. So they're going to have him lose 2 weeks in a row, the NXT champion. Where they were going with that story, I don't know. I mean, maybe Jeff was getting another push. He just came out with the No More, was it No More Words?
No More Words, yeah.
His theme that he loves. I'm thinking, all right, maybe they're doing something. And so seeing Dynamite, seeing what's going on the last 2 weeks in a row, I'm kind of glad that we're doing this little bi-weekly episode. To me, I was like, damn, dude, what are some of the worst NXT call-ups that you expected big things from and just didn't pan out for whatever reason? And that just got me thinking. So I texted you and I was like, we should just do like a top five list. Like, and this is a personal list. This is not like an overall whatever. This is like how you personally feel of like top five of the NXT call-ups that when they came up, not just us, but maybe everybody felt like, damn, this guy's really good. And WWE just dropped the fucking ball. Because it looks like, to me, and I don't know how you feel about this, but it just looks like to me, Keith Lee's going through the motions until they either send him back to NXT or he's gone. And that's terrible because he had a great showing in Survivor Series and he had a great showing in the Royal Rumble. He beat Randy Orton on a pay-per-view, his first pay-per-view. It looked like all the things were in line, and then he disappeared for 5 months. You know, they don't say what it is. He's not really letting on what it is, whether it's a mental, you know, there's some rumors of a mental health issue, physical injury, and then he's coming back, and then this week he's just lost second time in a row and talking about he wants to tell his story, but they won't let him, so he'll do it himself. I don't know what that's about. You know, so to me, it's like, okay, we need to have a discussion here. Like, what is going on with NXT? Because then, again, and forgive me if I'm all over the place, but the ideas are spinning. But I also read another report. Karrion Kross is losing. Was not part of a storyline with Jeff Hardy, a planned storyline with Jeff Hardy, but almost like a shot to NXT. Like, you guys aren't as big as the main roster guys. And they brought him up specifically to lose as a lesson. But and I don't get that.
Why would you do that? Like, why? Right. First of all, NXT is the third brand. It's no longer, at least in my view, and I don't know how other people feel about it, but in my view, it's no longer the training grounds or the minor leagues or it's the third brand for WWE, right? It's kind of what we wanted, in a sense, WWE ECW to be, right? The legit third brand. NXT is the better show weekly. I've been saying that for a long time, and I stick by it. It is the more entertaining from start to finish. It is the more entertaining show. It is traditional wrestling. It's creative. It's fresh. It's a mix of everything that we should want in a wrestling product today. So to bring up your guy who is the NXT champion, right? And just to kind of get it started, Karrion Kross is on my list of guys who are botched already.
As in okay. Top five, or as an honorable mention?
No, as in top five, right?
Okay.
And the reason why I put him there is because I guess I'm more of a traditionalist when it comes to, I'll reiterate something that I said before. We don't work for the WWE. We don't work in wrestling. You know, I know someone like Bruce Pritchard or Eric Bischoff will say, you know, that we're just a couple of guys sitting on our computers who have never run a wrestling company. Yes, absolutely. You are correct. But we are fans and we have an opinion, and we're also not stupid as to how things have worked behind the scenes in wrestling. And I'm more of a traditionalist where if you're going to push a guy who is supposed to be a main event level type of talent, and you're going to bring him up and have him lose right away, you're gonna take Scarlett away for whatever reason. You're stripping down his entrance that people love. He's the NXT champion, undefeated, running roughshod through NXT. You bring him up and you have him lose, albeit to Jeff Hardy. Sure, we all love Jeff Hardy, but you have him lose. Why do I care now? Why do I care about anything that you do with this guy in the future? Why? Because wins and losses, they do matter when you're trying to build somebody.
Right, right.
You know, and you can get away with it in certain situations. Like Kurt Hawkins got away with it because they made a story out of it. He had lost so much. Okay, well, when's he going to get his first win? You wanted to see him win. That doesn't work for a guy like Karrion Kross. That doesn't work for a guy like Keith Lee. These are guys that are supposed to come up, and you're supposed to build them up to be your next stars, to carry the company into the future, to be the guys that challenge Roman Reigns. I had saw a post on social media. Karrion Kross's debut, the moment he walked out, people are saying he's done. That's it. It's over. What's the point now? Why do we give a shit about Karrion Kross now? Why? And you do that. You do it on purpose to prove a point? Whose idea is that? Vince McMahon? That's fucking dumb.
Now, for me, that's a, you know, I don't know. It's a rumor, but that's another rumor that I've been reading a lot of that all week, especially because his loss did send a lot of waves. I don't have him on my list here because I'm still waiting. The jury's still out, but you're cutting out his legs from underneath him before he even gets a chance to get up and running.
Right.
And he's holding a title of your third brand. You know, my thing is for that is, and this is where vignettes that they don't do anymore to introduce new talent, instead of just bringing them right up, like, oh, you know him from NXT? Here he is. Instead of doing vignettes to introduce him, or saying, well, Karrion Kross is debuting in 3 weeks, 2 weeks. They did it for Tony Storm, which I don't get, but they didn't do it for anybody else. You know, it's few and far in between. And why the fuck can't we have enhancement matches anymore? Right. Why couldn't he just come out and squash a jobber and make him look good? You immediately put him against Jeff Hardy and loses. And then you have him against Keith Lee, who just returned too. Now that's his second loss in a row. And now he's beating him after he just got surprise pinned by Jeff Hardy. It's like, why not just come out back-to-back weeks? Instead of rolling over a star in your company, roll over some fucking jobber and build up his worth until he gets into his first story. Because you know you don't got a story for him right now.
You know? No, and that's another thing. They bring these guys up with nothing to do for them.
And that's the thing I think, I've had this conversation with several other fans, you know, friends of the show and stuff like that. And it's like, if I don't watch NXT, just like we just talked about with Nick Gage and AEW, right? If I don't watch NXT, and like, for instance, when Sami Zayn debuted against John Cena in the U.S. title, when he was doing the U.S. title open challenge, if I'm a Fairweather fan, you know, I had a friend of mine who was in the crowd that night, that he was with his cousin. His cousin's like, who's Sami Zayn?
Yeah.
He didn't watch NXT at the time. NXT was just on the network, you know?
Yeah.
And he had a NXT, you know, Sami Zayn is this guy, blah, 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 because the crowd loves him. Oh, okay, cool. And it was just like, okay, you didn't, and it was a nice surprise. But if you would have had him lose that night and then come back with some interview segments, some vignettes, so you could introduce who he is and know, and to the crowd, so they could kind of like get behind him. Now it's just like, listen, he unfortunately injured his shoulder that night. But you know, had he not, it would just been like, yeah, he's back next week. Now he's gonna win against somebody in our, you know, against Zack Ryder, let's say, for instance. And that's the problem I have with it too. My number five is Aleister Black, and to me, it just, he had all the tools of a top star. He had all the tools of a main event guy. He had the look. He had the music. He had the entrance. And I kept saying it over and over again to other people, too. I was like, dude, he could be like, if they played him right, he could have been this generation's Undertaker. And not Undertaker supernatural, just the darkness, the goth, the music, the metal. You know, they could have played into that. And, you know, they did, you know, for months it was a, who's going to pick a fight with me? And him and Cesaro had some badass matches on the main roster.
Mm-hmm.
And he went away. Then he came back and kind of did this thing with Seth Rollins. He was gone for a while. He turned heel unexpectedly. Got drafted to SmackDown. We were both like, where the fuck is he? He comes back from when SmackDown got released. And he was an NXT champion. He had great matches with Velveteen Dream, Adam Cole, Andrade when he won the belt. He had a great match with Tommaso Ciampa. Now, he got great matches in NXT, lights out matches. He had a great gimmick. And, you know, when they panicked and started bringing up these NXT guys, and Ricochet and him got called up as like a tag team, which was really weird. You know, they were in WrestleMania and then, you know, he's gone. Like, and to me, it was just like, dude, you had a star right there.
Yeah.
And he was gone. And now he's on, and to the point where people were pissed off that he got released in the company, saying he was premature, and now he shows up on Dynamite. Looks dope, by the way. Mm-hmm. I hope he kicks Cody's ass. And he looks awesome. And now he's going to be a star for them. Like, it's terrible.
Yeah, and he's on my list as well, so I guess he would be number four. But he was a big miss for them because, and I think it's probably going to ring true for a lot of these guys, they brought him up with no plan at all. And you can tell that they didn't know what to do with him. It's like they bring him up, you know, and talking specifically about Aleister Black, they bring him up and then they go, okay, what now? It's like, what do you mean, what now? You know,
they panicked. It was a panic move. It was like, look at all these guys we're bringing from NXT. And then it's like, okay, then what do we do now? I don't know. They're here. Cheer for them.
Right. Yeah. And there's no story. There's no buildup. There's no reason to make anyone want to care about them at all, whether you know them or not. And they disappear for a while for whatever the reason is, mostly because they just don't know what to do with them. So they keep them off TV, and then you just care less and less and less about these people. And you know, it's one of the reasons why a lot of these guys and ladies get jaded and want to, you know, as soon as they get released, want to do an RF video where they just blast everybody. And sometimes you can't blame them, because especially guys like, and people like Aleister Black, who just don't get used when you know that they bring something to the table.
Right. or they're pitching ideas constantly you hear and it gets shut down. My thing is, like, if you have so many writers, why are there not enough storylines? Why is it like, you know, I'm looking at I was watching Kevin Nash and Steve Austin, the Broken Skull Session, the most latest one. And Steve Austin was saying, like, you know, during the Attitude Era, everyone was there, everyone was kicking ass, and everybody had a storyline. You could count on one hand the amount of storylines that are on both shows, Raw and SmackDown. And it's amazing to me, you have so many guys and you can't come up with these things every week. It's the same matches every week. It's the same. And it's not really any type of storylines. And when you do have really good storyline, you know, don't get me wrong, they're doing some good things right now with Cena and Reigns and everything like that. But it's just like, once Cena leaves, who's next? Right?
Yeah.
And this is where you would get it. I mean, listen, you know, and I don't want to get too ahead of myself. My number four is Tyler Breeze. I absolutely love Tyler Breeze in NXT. I thought he was great. It was the model gimmick. We've seen it before. We've seen it done a million times. He did it great with the selfie stick when he was taking pictures of himself and it was projected on things. But this guy, you want to talk about having dynamite matches? You know, he had these great matches. They gave him, they trusted him so much, he wrestled Liger.
And Liger's only WWE match, yeah. He wrestled Liger. You
know, it wasn't the match I hoped it would be. It was a good match.
It was a good solid match.
I was there. I saw it. I got to see Liger in person, which was great. It was cool. And the buildup to it, where he would beat these guys in NXT every week and then put Liger's mask on him and then pin him. You know, he had this great thing, like, don't touch my face, don't do this. And then he's another one that they just dropped on SmackDown. Dolph Ziggler was there. They debut him on SmackDown. He beats Dolph Ziggler.
And then that's it.
Nothing else happened after that. Then he just started just jobbing out to everybody. He goes face, starts jobbing out to everybody.
And like, then he becomes a comedy act.
Then he finds new life with Fandango. They do the Breeze Angle thing. They started doing stuff on WWE.com that got noticed. They started having the faction files. It was probably one of the most entertaining things on SmackDown every week at the time. That was so great that they moved them to NXT back.
Yeah.
They have a nice NXT title run. Get released. He was a guy that, listen, I didn't expect, I thought Tyler Breeze was a great personality. He was a great wrestler. I didn't expect Tyler Breeze to get called up and be world champion. I'm being realistic. But when you had your Cruiserweight Classic and Tyler Breeze wasn't a part of it, and then you built up your Cruiserweight division and Tyler Breeze wasn't a part of it, you know, and I think he fought for the Cruiserweight title or had a few Cruiserweight matches here and there. But why was he not a cornerstone of that division to start it off, to kick it off? He had the personality, he had the look, he had the skill. And you could have, instead of putting it behind, you know, Pac and Neville and then eventually Enzo, you had a great heel there that could have really carried that division as champion or as a foil for a champion. And I don't know why they never threw him in that division. I used to say constantly, like, dude, he would be so great in that Cruiserweight division right now with Swerve and Nice and Gulak and all those guys that were there. They could have had dynamite matches, but they didn't care. And they just, again, they just were like, remember this guy from NXT had these great matches? Here he is. Okay, he won one match. See you later. And it had nothing. He had to create his own storyline with Fandango. And then as soon as it was good enough, they dropped it. And then that's it. Like, you know, like the feud against the Usos, and they had the, you know, the Down Since Day One-ish shirt. And they were like, Day One is H? What does that even mean? It was fantastic. It was stupid, but it was funny. He's like, yeah, we'll beat the Usos, and then our Day One will be H. Like, it's just so, like, but it was hilarious. And he just released. And then you hear the stuff after the fact of how instrumental he was in NXT and training these guys and helping these guys along. It's like, what the, why? That's another one that they just, a swing and a miss.
Tyler Breeze was fun in the, you know, the early days of NXT with his model gimmick. And like you said, with the selfie stick, it was fun. When he came up, yeah, he beats Dolph Ziggler, and like you said, he's gone. Yeah, I mean, and I totally agree with you on him being a miss too. That Cruiserweight division, I do want to point out, I think that the Cruiserweight Classic was an amazing, awesome thing. Bringing that back, the Cruiserweight title, the new version of it with the purple belt, awesome. And for a while, it meant something. I think it's only a matter of time before that title's thrown in the trash like the first time they did with the Cruiserweight division. I just think you can tell that they don't really – they put stock in it only for so long, only to be like, yeah, we don't really need this. That's just how I feel with it. Kushida's the champion. I think Kushida has it as like a token. It's like, okay, Kushida's here. We kind of don't know what to do with him either, so let's just put the title on him. that's, it just feels like a token at this point, and there's no real value to it anymore. Not like it was when they first brought it back.
Right. I will say that I think the title is better off in NXT because the main roster, they didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah.
They were giving them these little brief matches or six-man tags to showcase everybody in the division. 205 Live, unfortunately, like, I don't have time to watch. I'm sorry. There's just so much content every week that that's one of the shows I have to kind of just leave by the wayside.
And they had some good stuff on there, though, like when they first started with that show.
I thought it was great when, you know, they had elements where, like, Drew Gulak was like the politician, Drew Gulak for a better 205 Live. And they had like these, they had some really good storylines there. They did.
Yeah.
Like for me, it was just like, how much wrestling can I watch in a week? I love wrestling, don't get me wrong, but it's just like show after show after show after show, you know? So it's kind of like, right. But so I'm glad it kind of found its legs on NXT for the most part. But to me, like, Tyler Breeze would have been perfect. Cause like I said, like, you know, some people, they expect these guys to come up and be like, why is he in the world title picture? I never expected Tyler Breeze to be a world champion. But I saw him in that division, like, dude, this is, that's his division, and they blew it. So, all right, I digress here. I'll kick it to you for number three on the list here for you.
Okay, so that's going to be, and this one might be, it might surprise you a little bit, but I'm going to say Adam Rose. And not because I was a fan of Adam Rose, but because what he was doing in NXT was pretty popular. It was a complete dud on the main roster.
Oh, my God.
That's
an understatement.
You know, it just like, it just felt awkward on the main roster for whatever reason. And I don't know if that's necessarily, you know, WWE dropping the ball or what happened there. But you know, it did come to mind as like, you know, I wanted to bring him up and mention him because, yeah, something went wrong there. And it just, I don't know. It just didn't feel right when it got to the main show. People just did not give two shits. The whole thing with the bunny was weird. And then they changed his gimmick. They stopped with the whole party kind of Congo line thing because they realized, okay, this is not working. So they changed his character. That didn't work either. And then he wound up being gone. And what I found funny, too, is to kind of tie this into somebody else. They stopped the whole like party Congo line thing that he was doing only to bring it back for No Way Jose for it to not work again. And then they released No Way Jose. So,
but that's an essential, like you need those comedy characters, right? I think of Santino Morella and stuff like that. So Adam Rose didn't make my list. I actually threw him on the honorable mention list. And I'll tell you why, because for me, it was just, he's the classic case along with a few others. And I'm going to mention my honorable mentions right before my number one, but he was a classic case of way too early call-up. And I know he was in NXT for a long time, but he did this gimmick called Leo Kruger, which is more like a heelish, evil character, which I actually thought was pretty cool. If you look at the promos on YouTube, if they still have them, it was cool. But they felt like it wasn't working. So he went with this party animal Adam Rose gimmick. They saw it once. It was like, oh, we can make money with this, and threw him on the main roster. He was super popular, super over in NXT.
Mm-hmm.
But that might be, for him, I would also say that maybe that was just like a niche character for a niche crowd.
Yeah.
Maybe. You know, and the party line thing, yeah, it you know, and as soon as it hit, it was a dud on the main roster. It didn't really work, but they also didn't let him chant because, like, yeah, he did the whole party thing. He walked in with all these guys. He, you know, he did like the, you know, the stage dive type thing, but they never let him wrestle. His matches were so short.
Yeah.
You know, and then he was on the Social Outcast group.
Yep.
For a while, and then I don't, yeah, he, you know, so okay, this isn't working. What am I gonna do? Well, let's turn him heel. Party's over, and then he became the party pooper type, you know. And then he went back to NXT for a brief spell, and he was gone.
Yeah.
So you know, I feel, and especially if you ever watch the ESPN documentary when it was just they covered him and Tyler Breeze and Xavier Woods, to see what he was going through with his son and his wife, and his son, you know, was fighting some illnesses and stuff like that. Like, I was like, wait, man, they could really turn this into something inspirational for him to really go for it, you know? And they never did nothing with it, never capitalized off of it, anything. And he was just a classic case for me anyway, that they were just like, oh, this gimmick's cool. We're not going to flesh it out though. Yeah. You party, you walk through this thing. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to do that. Your match is going to be 10 seconds long. And then it's like, this doesn't work, but yo, the bunny is getting over. Let's do the bunny thing, you know? Anyway, but I'm with you on that. I do agree. But my number three is actually Enzo and Big Cass. It's a little weird because I was kind of back and forth on this because part of it is their own undoing. To start it off, if you want to talk about an over thing in NXT, these guys were fucking over. And I saw them live. The crowd was so into them. Enzo what he lacked in the ring, he made up for on the mic. And what Big Cass lacked on the mic, he made it up in the ring. And they just, they were the perfect duo for each other. You know, they lifted each other up where they each had their respective weaknesses. They added Carmella to the mix, but they also had some really good matches with the Revival, FTR.
Vaudevillains.
Murphy, right. Vaudevillains. They had some really good fucking matches. They were solid, solid matches. Never had an NXT title run, but they never, for me, they didn't need the titles because they were that popular. And when they got to the main roster, I was like, these dudes are going to be superstars. They, to me, the way they treat the Street Profits now was going to be Enzo and Cass when they came up. You know, and they had these huge matches. They did a six man with John Cena, where John Cena just let Enzo take over the mic and let him do his thing. I was like, these guys are studs. These guys are gonna be superstars, and they broke them up immediately.
Yep.
And you know, maybe because they saw the money in Big Cass being so big and everything like that, but they never got a decent tag team run. They never even sniffed a chance at the tag team titles. They broke them up immediately. Enzo did have some shine with the cruiserweight division, but then he got in some trouble. He was released. Big Cass had, it looks like they were going to put some steam behind him. He started feuding with Daniel Bryan, and then he was immediately released due to, you know, drinking issues and, you know, and the like, some other stuff. So the ending, entirely their fault with the reason why they got released. But that beginning, you couldn't have a hotter act from NXT come up, and they, and this goes back to our tag team wrestling debacle.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they immediately broke them up, and that was such a fucking mistake. That was the downfall immediately.
And I think you can probably credit to what, and for those you know, listening, you can listen to our episode where we talked about tag team wrestling. You can probably credit it to Vince McMahon looking at them and saying, look at the size of Big Cass, he's the next star, let's break them up and push him right now. And that whole Big Cass versus Enzo rivalry could not have gone worse. You know, it was like, I was at that SummerSlam. I know you were too.
Yeah.
Where it was Cass versus Big Show, and Enzo was in the Shark Tank above the ring. And it, nobody cared at all. No one cared. And it's like, you know, you listen to Bruce Pritchard. It was like a fart in church. It's just like nobody really cared. And after that, I think Cass got injured. Enzo went to 205 Live and did his thing. And, you know, just like you said, it didn't work out for them. And it really hasn't worked out since. You know, they seem to have, I don't know what's going on with them nowadays.
Well, Enzo's completely, it seems like he's out of the wrestling game. Cass is now an Impact. It looked like Enzo was going to resign with WWE, but then when he pulled off those shenanigans at Survivor Series, he's now like persona non grata there. And then it looked like they were going to do a thing with ROH, where they ran in and did this thing and nothing.
I remember that, yeah. Nothing happened.
They said that they thought it was good, but then ROH just never seemed to contact them again. So it's unfortunate. Cass goes by the name, I think, of W. Morrissey, which is like his real name, William Morrissey, in Impact. So, you know, maybe, you know, it seems that he also said that he at the time when he left his release, he was dealing with, he had bipolar disorder. He was drinking a lot. He seems to have stopped drinking and all that stuff. So it's glad to see him get back on his feet. But the ending, yes, while completely they're doing the beginning, they fucked up. And I thought the minute they broke them up, that was the beginning of their downfall. And eventually, I remember talking to one of the friends of the show, Coco, and just being like, yo, this is it for them. They're never going to rebound from this. And they didn't. And that's terrible. Number two, I feel like we're Tyler breezing right through this. How you doing?
Well, speaking of tag teams, I got AOP on here, the Authors of Pain.
Oh, okay.
When they showed up in NXT with Paul Ellering, I was just like, okay, you know, let's see what these guys can do. They were immediately thrusted into the spotlight, at least, you know, in NXT. They were like the new Road Warriors, right? They were unstoppable. They were unbeatable. They were just thrashing everybody. I mean, they did lose, but they were thrashing everyone. They won the NXT tag titles. They won the Dusty Rhodes classic tournament. They were on a rampage, and you just felt like they were going to be a nice shot in the arm for the tag team division when they went up. And when they went up, it was anything but that. And they were another case of what happened with Aleister Black, right? They brought them up. They're like, what now? They gave them the Raw tag titles, which it was a run that meant absolutely nothing.
It was strictly to get over the Jason Jordan, Seth Rollins.
Right. Yeah, that's all it was. And then they disappeared. They suffered injuries. Yes, that's always a factor. They disappeared. They come back. They're a part of Rollins' stable, right? Was it Rollins' stable they were part of?
Yeah.
And then they disappear, and then the next thing you know, they're just out of the company. And it's just like, it's just one of those things for me where I would have liked to have been in the room and just be like, what happened here? Like, how did the ball get dropped with these guys? Two big, monstrous, you know, guys who have the whole foreign aspect, right? You know, you can always play off of the foreign heel type thing. But big, tough, intimidating guys that you believe are going to go in the ring and destroy people. And they just, you know, for whatever reason, I would love to find out why they would just – I mean, you talk about the ball dropping. That feels like an understatement.
So they didn't make my list, but I definitely – the argument is there. I think just – for me, they were snake bitten by a lot of injuries. Especially even with the Rollins feud, you know, they came back, they're wearing the suits, they looked really good, and then they got injured. One of them got injured again. So that was kind of like the end of their run. I think once you get that injury prone label, as they say, it's kind of like, damn, you got injured again. All right, we can't do nothing with these guys. You know what I mean? But at the same time, they debut to little fanfare because it's like, again, they just dropped them on Raw, and the first thing they do is they ditch Paul Ellering. And it was like, he was their mouthpiece. Not that they struggle with English, but it seems like they could really cut a great promo where Paul Ellering could just, he got you, right? And I was like, okay, here it is. I remember when they dropped Paul Ellering, I was like, they ain't making it. And I don't know why. I say this a million times, like, you know, yeah, you've been a fan for so long. You kind of tell where things are going. You kind of tell, like, this isn't going to work or that'll work. You know, and there are times where I'm absolutely wrong, and I'm happy to be wrong when it comes to wrestling. You know, like a few years ago, I thought AJ Styles and Shane McMahon was going to be a shit WrestleMania match. It ended up being pretty good, and I was happy to be wrong. I'm happy to be wrong with that stuff because I want those people to succeed. But when they dropped him immediately, and I was like, this isn't going to work. And I know it was because I think Paul Ellen maybe couldn't do traveling as often.
Yeah,
there was ways around that, or you could put him with somebody else. You know,
well, they put him with Drake Maverick, right? But it just didn't fit.
That didn't work either. You know, he was dressing up like them. And listen, they tried. And then they got hurt again. But yeah, I mean, that is something. So my number two and my number one are a little, I don't want to say controversial, but because you could also make the argument for the other side as well, right? But my number two is Rusev. And I'll explain it. Because yes, you can make the argument that you're like, not really. Rusev was very successful. He had several U.S. title runs. He had a big WrestleMania match, blah, blah, blah. And my argument is, yeah, he had all that, and they fucked it up completely. He came on the scene. He, again, you talk big foreign heel, right? He was the big, you know, Bulgarian brood who loved, you know, Mother Russia. Lana had the great look. You know, Brigitte Nielsen from Rocky IV. She had the accent. She was great. She could talk Russian because she was fluent in the language. They had everything set up for them, and the guy could fucking wrestle, and he was awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay? He goes over Sheamus. He's going undefeated. He's tearing through these dudes. He fucking rode it on a tank at WrestleMania against John Cena. Now, a lot of people say that John Cena lost his downfall. I don't think so. I thought that was fantastic. Did it help him? Did it affect him losing to Cena at such a big stage? Maybe. But the fact that you're going against the biggest guy in the company is a big fucking deal. Okay?
Yeah.
You know, and then from then, that match, and I don't think it was because of the loss. I think from there, it was kind of like, well, what do we do with this guy? He just lost the scene internally. Because then it was, you know, he was with the, what was the name of that stable? Where it was Del Rio and Sheamus and
the League of Nations.
The League of Nations, which was actually pretty cool, but they didn't do anything with it. It was just to get Sheamus over in that world title run, you know? And then, you know, what do we do with him now? And then did he get injured a couple of times? Yeah, but then it was, well, I'm going to break you off from Lana. And then him and Lana had this little feud with Dolph Ziggler and Summer Rae. And then they had a problem with them announcing their engagement, which, surprisingly, Lana didn't announce the engagement. She sent the photos to a friend who leaked it to TMZ. Mm-hmm. And they immediately dropped the angle and say, oh, they're married again. You know, then they split them up. But then this guy goes and takes one thing, making fun of the New Day and says, Rusev Day. And it takes off. Crowd is loving it. The crowd is chanting it. He has Aiden English doing the little chant. He did the Rusev Day thing at WrestleMania. The crowd loved it. It was fucking over. He was selling out T-shirts so much, but then they told him, well, no, they didn't print enough T-shirts. That's why they're selling out. Like, they tried to, like, lie to him. Right? I mean, well, he's not over. Rusev Day is over. No, that fucking dude was over, and he could fucking wrestle. And then on top of all that, it turns out he didn't need Lana. Not that he didn't need her, but he had personality on his own. This dude was kind of funny-ass promos, good-ass promos, and it was great. And then what happened with that? Well, they dropped the Rusev Day angle. Okay, great. And then they put him in some bullshit feud with Bobby Lashley that they never even finished. And then they released To me, that's a fucking botch, because that, to me, Rusev was a future world champion. And he was a future main eventer. And they fucking blew it. They had it, and they blew it.
I do think that Rusev was a star, a main event level talent. And a great heel, somebody who was probably better off being like a lifelong heel. I wasn't super over with him. I wasn't like the biggest supporter, but I did recognize that he was a top guy, or could have been, and probably should have been. I do remember when they announced, was it the first, the Greatest Royal Rumble? Was it that when he fought Undertaker?
Yeah.
And I remember that when they announced that match, and then they actually changed it to Undertaker and Jericho, and then they changed it back because apparently Undertaker was like, no, I want Rusev in this match. And I thought, well, that should say something. You know, when you have someone like Undertaker saying, I want this guy, right. They make it a casket match, Rusev loses. It's like, okay, whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think that they definitely didn't. Rusev, I think, is going to be a guy that they probably really didn't know what they had. And they put him in bad storylines, and I think that ultimately hurt him. Losing to John Cena, no, not a big deal. Being in a stupid storyline with Dolph Ziggler, and I'm sorry, it was stupid. People might disagree; it was dumb. But then to redo it with Bobby Lashley, it's just like
it was the same fucking story.
It's the same storyline. Yeah, it's
same exact thing.
Same exact thing.
Only he was the face this time. That was the only difference.
Yeah, it was just he was a product of just terrible storylines, and that, I guess they just, like you said, they're like, oh, Rusev Day is over. They just didn't know what they could have had.
My thing is too, if you see what he's doing on Dynamite right now, it's like, fuck, dude, and he's cutting these promos that are really, really fucking good, and he seems like he has a passion for it again, and it pisses me off because I was a big fan of Rusev, and to me they blew it. And a lot of people do say, well, he shouldn't have lost to Cena at WrestleMania. Because that was his downfall. Like, no, you know what the fucking downfall was? Creative not knowing what to do after he lost to Cena. Because you could have fucking definitely had him rebound from that loss. And they blew it again. They started blaming it on Lana. And that led to that stupid fucking feud with Dolph Ziggler. So rather than going from Cena to, let's say, another top babyface. And I love Dolph Ziggler. That's no disrespect. But they did this breakup storyline with Ziggler. And it was stupid. You know, and that's the problem. It was the response to the loss, not the actual loss itself. And that's why he lost the steam.
But let's not forget too that match against Cena at WrestleMania was the second one. He actually beat Cena at Fastlane.
He did.
So he got a huge clean victory over him at Fastlane, and WrestleMania was, I guess, Cena's redemption, and not the blow up because they did have another match after that. But he went over on Cena clean before that.
Right.
So I don't know how much for those who complain about that, I don't know how much water that holds, but. I just think the fact that they kept putting him in shit storylines ruined him completely.
Right, and it just bothers me tremendously. I know you can make the argument for the other side, but anyway, regardless. All right, are we up to our respective number ones here, or did you go for your number two?
No, I'm up to the last one, and okay.
Hold on. I don't want you to drop it just yet.
Okay.
Drop it just yet, because I'm gonna throw in some honorable mentions here that I feel like. Maybe should be addressed. So we did talk about AOP and Adam Rose. They were on my list. And this is completely by accident because I started listing out some honorable mentions and I noticed that I had a trend. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of tag teams on here. First off the bat, The Ascension. Now here's the thing. The reason why I put them on the honorable mention list is because when they came up from NXT, they were the longest reigning NXT tag team champions ever. They were dominant in NXT. They were great. I also think they were a product of very early NXT where they weren't a lot of great tag teams at the time, right?
Okay.
They came onto the main roster and started running through people. They started this promo where they were like, they're better than Demolition, they're better than Legion of Doom, they're better than all these old tag teams. And then they lost Road Dogg and Billy Gunn. Then they beat them, and then that was it. They completely dropped the storyline. They were just in the background for years. They
were jobbers.
Something. Yeah, they became a jobber tag team. They started doing something with Stardust, where they were like the cosmic waste.
Yeah, yeah.
And they dropped that because, you know, Cody left, and then that was it. They were just there, and that, like, I never saw a storyline. I mean, I have seen it, but for a tag team that had a lot of steam, being the longest reigning NXT tag team champs of all time, and then for their storyline to be dropped so quickly. They had a storyline for about 2 months, and then they just lingered around for like 5 years. And that was it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a shame. I liked the Ascension at first, and then you realize that they weren't that great. But anyway, American Alpha. I thought they were a great tag team.
They were.
And here's why I put them on the honorable mention, because Chad Gable's still trying to find his footing. Jason Jordan, unfortunately, can't wrestle any longer, so he's a producer backstage. But they had some really great matches in NXT. I thought they had a really good upside. They won the SmackDown tag titles. They dropped them, and they split them up.
They put Jason Jordan in that, another victim of a ridiculous storyline of being Kurt Angle's illegitimate son. Chad Gable, you kept hearing over and over that he was going to be the next Kurt Angle. And you're right. He's still trying to find out where he's going to stand on the roster. And now he's got that tag team with Otis.
Chad Gable, American Alpha. Then he had that towel, which was great. It was ready, willing, and Gable, which was great. They dropped. Wouldn't let him do it. Then he was Shorty G, which was dumb. And then it looked like he was going to start working on 205 Live, but then they brought him right back onto SmackDown. And it seems now this Alpha Academy they got going on with him and Otis, I hope it works. They're showing a different side to Otis and getting real serious. I hope this works.
Let's hope.
Drop it. Okay, my next one, again, another tag team, the Vaudevillains. Now, they weren't the greatest tag team. I dug the gimmick because it's like old-timey and the little entrance. The reason why I throw them on there, because Simon Gotch is kind of a victim of his own undoing, but Aiden English was dope. Mm-hmm. And when Simon Gotch got released, he could have taken that and been like, listen, I'm done. And you want to talk about a guy who maximized his minutes every time he was on SmackDown. He started this Drama King character, which he had in NXT previously. But then they paired him with Rusev, and he was doing the Rusev Day entrance. It's like, oh, this is fucking cool. And he killed it every week. And then they dropped him. And then he started doing commentary. He was really good on commentary. And then they dropped him again. And for him, a guy like Aiden English, I would have loved to see him get some time. Because every time he had time on TV, he crushed it. I did throw AOP and Adam Rose. My last one, again, it's another team, but it was Sanity.
Oh, God.
Sanity had all this upside. The entrance was really cool. You had the leader in Eric Young. Killian Dane looked like he was going to be a future stud. You know, Alexander Wolf was kind of like their wild card. And then Nikki Cross was awesome. You see what she's doing now. She's the most successful one out of them. But like when they debuted, it was like Sanity's debuting. I was like, oh shit, this is going to be fucking cool if they did it. And then
they came up for one day. For
several months. Yeah, they were up for one time. They were gone for a while. And then they came up and then they split them all up.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah, that's wow. I forgot about them until you said them. And that's it. Because when they were in NXT, they were really cool. They had a cool gimmick. They had a cool thing going on. And the fact that I forgot about them because of how they were treated on their main roster is sad to think of, because they were up for one day and then disappeared for like a year. And then when you started seeing them coming back, they were, like you said, they were all broken up. Eric Young is by himself. Alexander Wolf is off in doing Imperium. He joins Imperium. Then they release him. Killian Dane just got released recently after they sent him back down to NXT. And now Nikki Cross is the Raw Women's Champion, but her gimmick is totally different.
And when they first debuted, when they came up to the main roster, Nikki Cross wasn't with them. They brought him with them 2 weeks later. And they were losing like crazy. And Killian Dane had all this upside. He was a big monster. He was very, very agile. He was great in that War Games match. And they bring him up and they put him in a singlet. And I was like, what are they doing? And I'm guessing because he was like hairy on his back. That's just a complete, I'm reaching. I really don't know what it was. But then they were gone. And then they did a draft and they brought Eric Young to Raw. Killian Dane went back to NXT. I was like, you just ruined an awesome fucking stable.
Yeah.
They were really cool. And they took down the Authors of Pain in a really good match, and they made it believable. And they had, and they were just really, really good going to NXT. And they just was just like, eh, I don't get it. Later. You know? And it's just like, I hated it, and I'm terrible. Anyway, that's the end of my honorable mentions. I feel like I should throw Ricochet on there, but it seems like he's doing some stuff now. So I don't know, man. Ricochet, Apollo Crews would have been on this list if this was a few months ago.
Yeah.
But it seems like he's found his footing, and I'm glad for him because he's a great talent, and I'm glad to see what he's doing now. He's in a Continental Champion. But had you asked me a few months ago, I would have definitely thrown him on this list as well.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I was a big fan of his. So as far as my honorable mentions list, I didn't even think of a lot of the people that you mentioned, tag teams and like American Alpha and stuff. I really just had one guy. And I don't know if people would consider this a failure or maybe borderline, something that I think he'll always be looked at what could have been, and that's Bray Wyatt. And I think for somebody that's so unique and created something in his first gimmick with Wyatt Family and being from the Swamps, that kind of Cape Fear-esque, Waylon Mercy-esque character, something that was so unique that it was going to be maybe in a way revolutionary and kind of just change everything about WWE. And it didn't do that. And again, people blame John Cena for that too. You know, they didn't know what to do with the Wyatt Family. They kept splitting them up and bringing them back, splitting them up, bringing them back. But Bray Wyatt was always, he's that guy that they felt like that he didn't need to win anything. That's how I feel about it. If you look at his win-loss record, I don't know really what it looks like. I'd have to look it up. But it just felt like they put him in a big storyline only to just have him lose all the time. Yeah, he was WWE champion. As he was, you know, in his original gimmick, he had, but it was transitional. It was only to just put it back on Randy Orton at WrestleMania. So it didn't feel like it meant a whole lot. They do this kind of thing with Matt Hardy, which fell flat on its face because it wasn't the Matt Hardy that we wanted. It wasn't broken Matt Hardy. It was woken Matt Hardy. And it just didn't feel like it would have been, it didn't feel like it should have been. You know, they put him together as a tag team. It was fine. I didn't mind him as a tag team. But then they give him the Fiend. And I'm like, he's done it again. He's again created something that when you first saw that playhouse, you're like, what is this? And then when you realize, you're like, oh, shit, this is actually pretty fucking cool. Mm-hmm. And that's all him. That came from him. And now, Yeah, he's Universal Champion, but it's just, and I know he's going through some stuff, and I'm not trying to discredit what he's going through, but it just feels like Bray Wyatt is going to be the guy that you just look at and say, yeah, he had some success, but he should have been a whole lot more successful.
All right, so can I piggyback off that real quick?
Yeah.
My number one is the Wyatt Family. So, no, I'm dead serious. I thought about this for a while, because I thought about this for a while. I really did. And for the amount of success that Bray Wyatt has had, world champion, universal champion, and when I say Wyatt Family, I am incorporating Luke Harper, Brody Lee, and Eric Rowan, and to some extent Braun Strowman in this, because when they came on the scene, so I remember, and I'm gonna say this every time until probably we stop doing this shit, but I was looking at, this is, you know, the early days of the WWE Network. And I was looking at the early NXT promos, and I was looking at stuff like Roman Reigns and Seth when he was like, you know, all this stuff. And I come across this promo by Bray Wyatt, and it's him and Eli Cottonwood at the time.
Yeah, and I've seen those. Yeah,
he's doing this, like, you know, Max Cady gimmick, and he's talking about where he grew up in Louisiana, and his dad had this shrimp and boat, and how, and as he's going and going and going, he talks about how he set it on fire and this whole thing. And it was very, very low and subtle. And I'm like, yo, this dude's going to be a fucking star. Because I loved the promo. I loved that. I must have watched that promo over the span of months. Like, I don't know, dozens of times. Dozens. Because I was like, yo, this dude needs to come up to the main roster because he is a star. And I started watching other promos from when he finally debuted. I'm like, yo, I cannot wait. This shit is going to be dope. And it just, it wasn't what it should have been. They didn't treat it as special as it should have been. And again, you can make the argument for the other side here, but the matches that they had with the Shield, where they actually went over, were fantastic, you know? And they just, they did really good stuff with him. But then it's like, he had a habit of like starting feuds with people. He would win the first match in the feud and then lose every match after that in the feud. So essentially, mm-hmm. like, he lost the feud, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't just Cena. Like, do I think he should have beat Cena at WrestleMania? I do. I also thought Rusev should have beat Cena at WrestleMania. But this is John Cena, right?
Mm-hmm.
This isn't some slouch. But if you really want to big these guys up, yeah, should he have that big win? Yeah. But then he lost that match. He won the previous one. And then he wins, you know, like a random cage match with him later on. But it happened with Randy. He would win the first match in the feud, and then he would go on in the long game to lose the feud entirely, along with the WWE title. Mm-hmm. And it was every match after that. You know, he would start these feuds. He would win that first match and go over and be like, oh, my God, Bray Wyatt. And then he would lose every match after that in the feud. And then, like you said, they would break up, split apart, and then bring them back together. Luke Harper, in terms of pure wrestling ability, was probably the best one out of all of them. And he had some fucking potential where he could have been like, you know, they wanted him to do that Southern accent. It didn't work and whatever. But he had an IC title run briefly just to put over a Survivor Series match
because
mm-hmm. he was part of that team. And then he loses it right back to Dolph Ziggler. And then they, you know, him and, you know, he leaves and him and Rowan do the Bludgeon Brothers thing, which was fucking cool as shit. They win the tag titles at WrestleMania. Rowan gets injured. They have to lose it. But then they bring them back, but they're not together.
Right.
You know, and then Rowan, probably, if you had to pick a worst out of the three, I guess, I don't want to disrespect him in any way, but, you know, when they did the Wyatt family iteration where it was him, Randy, and Luke, Rowan was nowhere to be found, right? And then, you know, sorry, my thing's messing up here. But, you know, they do that, and then it was just to further the Randy and other few. And then it was like, okay, they had this nice little match where it was AJ and Luke Harper in a match, winner gets a title shot. I was like, you know what they should do? They should do a triple threat where it's the three of them together, Luke Harper, Randy, and them. They didn't do that. They kind of just dropped Luke Harper. He got just so disillusioned, he asked for his release. You know, then again, yeah, he comes up with this Fiend character to refresh. Okay, so the kind of cultist Max Cady character kind of got tired out after a while, especially when he did the thing with Matt Hardy. And I dug the leaders of worlds.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool for a spell, you know? And then he comes up with this Fiend character. I'm like, this fucking thing is going to be awesome. Only for him to lose to Goldberg, to put Goldberg in a match with Brock Lesnar. So you kind of, they didn't kill the character, but to do what they did just for that, In the short run, not looking long term for him, making it a special character, as special as it could have been, all right. But then they go and do this Firefly Funhouse match, was probably one of the highlights of WrestleMania last year. Him and Alexa Bliss seemed to be going back and forth, which was great. And then, you know, the thing they had was Braun was kind of weird. And then now he's like, I know he's going through some things, and I don't want to disrespect him in the slightest, but like now it's like, you know, you're reading these reports where it's like they have no idea what they want to do with Bray. Why aren't you rekindling what's going on with him and Alexa? Because Alexa clearly fucking destroyed him, right? Yeah. So why aren't we revisiting that when he's ready? Now, I'm not saying he needs to have, it needs to happen
right
when he comes back. But to me, when I first saw that Bray Wyatt promo on NXT, I'm like, this guy's a star. And they brought him up and they just didn't, again, another one where it was like, what do we do with this guy? Is he supernatural? Is he like a cult leader? Is he just a crazy motherfucker? I don't know. So we have no idea what to do. So I don't know. So let's just throw him in some feuds. Yeah, he's cool. All right, throw him the world title. Yeah, but that's just for him and Randy. Randy's going to go over. He should have beat Randy that night, too. I'm sorry. But Randy shouldn't have won at WrestleMania. Bray should have won that bit. But then again, why did Randy win? Because Randy was a transitional champion, too. It was to get the belt on Jinder Mahal.
Yeah, that's true.
So there's your long-term booking. You know what your long-term booking was? Getting into India to make more money. That's the storyline there, right? And that's not disrespecting Jinder Mahal, but you know what it is, bro. You know what I mean? And to me, that's a big failure because the Wyatt family could have been so much more than what it ended up being. Individual success aside, I know the IC titles and everything like that and everything, you know, all this other bullshit, but like they didn't know what to do. So it was like, okay, let's break them off. Okay, no, it's not working. Bring them back together. All right, cool. Looks like it's working. Okay, cool. Break them up again. Yeah, it ain't working. Okay, bring them back together. All right, this guy asked for his release. He's injured. All right, cool. yo, Bray got this cool shit. All right, what are we going to do with it? I don't know. Listen, Goldberg's back. Have him drop the title. All right, cool. What are they going to do when he comes back now? You know, because now he's just a full-on horror movie character.
Yeah.
Right? Like a fucking guy got burned alive in the ring, came back. I thought it was a cool transition, only for him to lose.
In, so like, again, 2 minutes.
Again, he lost the feud.
Yeah. Not only lost the feud, lost it in 2 minutes, and then Alexa Bliss turned on him.
Right.
And I know they did that so he can take time off to take care of himself, and that's fine. But it's like, if he comes back, what do you do? And will we care?
Right.
And that's sad, because he is such a cool and creative and unique talent.
And he wants to do this stuff, right? He comes up with these characters himself.
Right.
So it's not just something he's being force-fed with, you know? But like, even that Bray Wyatt character coming from NXT had all this potential that they squandered. They had these great wins against the Shield and these other wins that they just never capitalized on. And to me, that's a fucking botch, because they had a great thing going when they came up. And that's why I made them number one, because for me, Bray Wyatt is going to be like what you just said. It's going to be a sad case of like, yo, man, remember Bray when he came up? Yeah, man. Yo, they could have did so much more with him. You know what I mean? That's the first thing I'm going to say when they say Bray Wyatt. Unless, hey, maybe something happens in the next year or two and I'm wrong. I think Bray Wyatt, to me, is probably a Hall of Famer now at this point, just of the stuff that he's doing, maybe his individual success. But to me, like, if he were to retire today and we brought him up a year from now, the first reaction for me would be like, damn, man, they could have did so much more with him.
I agree. The reason why he was my honorable mention is because I kind of went about this list a little different as far as people who I just felt like they completely 100% shit the bed with and didn't know what to do. So my number one, I mean, this list is kind of interchangeable for me, but I put EC3 on here.
Really?
To round it out. And the reason why is because I don't know if EC3 would have been a world champ or if he's, you know, a great worker or any of that. But he had a look, and you know, he had like one of those undeniable looks where you look at him and you're like, yeah, I can see this guy being a star. Right. He was doing big things in Impact, which, take it for what you will, because it is Impact. But when they brought him back, I felt like there was enough there to where he could be like the NXT champion and have a good run, almost like Bobby Roode type, where, you know, wearing the suits and thinking very highly of himself. The one percenter, I thought the one percenter gimmick was cool. They didn't do any of that. Instead, they didn't really make him a main event level on NXT, then put him on the main roster, tried to do something with him and Dean Ambrose, and then that fell through, and then you never saw him again, and then he's gone. And it's just like, how do you keep missing the boat on people that you are supposed to be building up to build your future, so we avoid what we've been going through the last few months, COVID or no COVID, where it's the same match that we see every week because you don't have anybody else to book?
Okay, so here's the thing. I'm with you. I wasn't the biggest EC3 fan at all. Derek Bateman, EC3, Ethan Carter III, whatever. I thought the character, though, was dope. I did like the character a lot coming out of Impact. I thought he cut a good promo. I thought he had some really, really good matches. Fucking the guy was Impact World Champion. He felt like, all right, I did everything that was need to be done at Impact. Let me move on. He is another case of he was brought up way too fast with nothing. Yeah. So he was there at NXT. He had a really good match with Velveteen Dream. He was in that North American ladder match. Again, another one who was snake bitten by injuries there too. He got injured a couple of times, but it was just like, hey, remember EC3 and Impact? Now he's on Raw. And the fans are like, why do I care about Ethan Carter III from Impact, who just lost to Velveteen Dream on TakeOver? Not like he didn't have a really huge win in NXT at
No,
all.
He didn't. He didn't.
He really didn't have that breakout match like most people have in NXT before he got called up. He didn't. And then they just brought him up out of nowhere. They really didn't establish his character. It was just like, yo, you remember this guy from Impact? Now he's on NXT. Well, now he's on Raw. He could have benefited from some vignettes before he came in, establishing the character and who he is, and some squash matches with some enhancement talent. And they did none of that. They did this weird thing with Dean Ambrose. You're absolutely right, where he beat Dean Ambrose and Dean Ambrose beat him, but then he beat Dean Ambrose and Dean Ambrose beat him, and then they dropped it. If you really want to talk about somebody who got so tired of or like maybe dejected, fed up. Look at when he first debuted in NXT in the North American title match, his entrance, when he pointed to the E, the C, the 3. And then look at one of his last matches on Main Event and how he's pointing to the EC3 at that point. At that point, he's just like, yeah, whatever, here it is. Yeah, I'm here. He didn't care anymore, man. And yeah, they took that life. They took the life out of him. But he's another one where, because he debuted with, was he part of that contingent with like Lars Sullivan at first and everything like that? Where it was like him.
I think Lacey, so, yeah. Evans.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So that was another one where they panicked and was like, here's some guys from NXT.
Yeah.
You know? And
Lars Sullivan's like, another miss.
Oh, fuck Lars Sullivan. No. I'm sorry.
Let's see. He's not a nice guy, but they built him up to be something, and then he wasn't anything. So.
Well, another one that got hurt, and then had anxiety, and went away. But, you know, given his track record of homophobic remarks and all that shit, fuck him. I'm sorry.
I don't disagree.
Their job and shit like that, but
I don't disagree as far as his character as a human being, but. He was somebody that, at least in NXT, I thought would be something.
Yeah, I didn't like him in NXT either. I mean, before all the other nonsense aside, I wasn't a big fan of his work. But, yeah, just given the size and the stature and what they were going to do with him on SmackDown, it seemed like he was going to be something. I mean, the guy was poised to wrestle John Cena at Mania at one point.
Yep.
And thank God that didn't happen. anyway, I mean, like, yeah, listen, I mean, that was a, I mean, to round that out, I see where you're coming from with that one for sure. I probably would do him on the honorable mentions list, but for me, like I said, like him and like an Adam Rose were like way too fat, like the call-ups that should have never happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they could have used a few more months. And like, it's funny though. And listen, this is not like a, at least for me, because like I want the purpose for me to point this out was because like, I know we always say like, well, they never know what to do with these NXT call-ups, but then you look at their record and Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins and Sasha Banks and Bayley and Charlotte and Becky Lynch. All your top stars came from NXT. They were there on NXT having big time matches. So they can make stars from these NXT people.
Right? Yep.
But it's these other ones that you feel like, damn, man, they just fucking missed the boat. Or, yeah, man, they had a halfway decent career. But when they first came up, they could have did so much more. To me, that's how I went about with this list. You know, like that's why I think Rusev and YFM were my number one and two, because, yeah, they had a pretty decent run, but their run could have been so much more. And more importantly, like, Rusev should still be with the company in a top spot, and he's not. And Bray and rest in peace to Brody Lee and them, shit, like, they had all the potential to be top main event stars when they first got there, and they just didn't know what to do as soon as they got there. You know, so, like, you know, you do have your, and I can keep going for days, but your Sami Zayn's and your Kevin Owens and everything like that. Like, there are success stories. Like, the shit does work, right? When you have, like, the talent and people take the time to invest in them. But for whatever reason, these people, you know, when they come up there and you're like, oh, yeah, they're definitely going to be doing it. Now, for me anyway, I think the tide has shifted to the point where a guy from NXT comes up and I'm like, fuck, I hope they don't mess this up.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
And Karrion Kross is another example, and Keith Lee's another example, where I'm like, they came up and I'm like, oh, this is gonna be cool as shit. I really hope they don't fuck this up.
And they, you know,
yeah, like, so like when Sasha Banks and Bayley and Charlotte first came up, well, the three of them, Banks, Becky and Charlotte, when they first came up, I was like, oh, this is fucking cool. This is gonna be cool as shit. And now fast forward a few years later, Karrion Kross is up there, and I'm like, damn, I really hope they don't mess this guy up. And they did. I mean, like, dude, I texted you, right?
Yeah.
Like, in real time. I was like, oh, shit, Kross is debuting, man. I hope they don't fuck this up. Then, like, 2 minutes later, I'm like, and they just did. Like, it was just like, dude, like, what the fuck, bro? Like, and that's, it's sad, man. It really is. And I hope that, I hope they write the ship with him.
We'll see. Bobby Roode's another miss, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
He was coming out of NXT looking really good. Yep. NXT champion. He had that, you know, he had the great theme song. He had the robes looking old school.
Cool entrance.
Yeah, like, you know, like another one where it was just like, here's Bobby Roode. And he could have been, I mean, and he still can too, for me anyway. Like, they could break out his character from NXT and still have a heel run against a face champion. And I think he could still work, you know, but now they have him with Ziggler with the Dirty Dogs. At least he's in the mix.
At least he's doing something, yeah.
He had a U.S. title run, and then he tried to do the whole Robert Roode thing with the friggin' mustache, and now he's just Robert Roode with what he was before. So I don't know. I mean, I think they could be doing something. He's another one. Yeah, like he could be or should be right now, maybe in the upper echelon. He should be better than what his current position currently is. I mean, and the same can be said for Ricochet as well.
Yeah.
Even though Ricochet is kind of bouncing back, but he had that nice little U.S. title run. He had the win over Samoa Joe. And then it was just like, what the fuck, dude? Like, you know, like he's the best high flyer I've ever seen since Rey Mysterio. And the fact that they're not capitalizing off of the fact that he does these dynamic moves. I mean, he had a great showing at Money in the Bank. He was one of the highlights. But yeah, for months he's been floundering. He lost that U.S. title and he just went right downhill, you know, and that's another one where I'm like, I'm scratching my head and I'm like, this guy should be a superstar. Maybe he shouldn't be in the world title mix. Maybe, you know, I don't know, but he should be one of your top tier guys, you know, and I'm talking, and when I say top tier, I'm talking mid card and up.
Right.
You know, I'm talking U.S. title, Intercontinental title. And up, you know, even the tag team to division, if you want to do something, you know, him and Cedric had like a thing going on for a while. And then they kind of just, you know, they broke him off of the Hurt Business. But like stuff like that. Like for me, it's like those guys. You should be building up now. To be your next, you know, Roman, you know, challengers for Roman or your next champions, because like, you know, is Roman going to drop the belt to Cena? I don't know. But then it's like, if he does, Cena has to leave eventually.
Yeah.
Right. So are they going to give it back to Roman? Or are they going to be able to Edge? Like, who's the next face guy to step up besides Big E? Big E's the only guy. And I personally, and if you're asking me now, preliminarily, I think Goldberg's going to take out Lashley and Big E's going to cash in and win the belt. I don't think Goldberg or Lashley leave SummerSlam with that title. I think Big E's going to be there. And then he goes to Raw to join Kofi and Xavier. You know what I mean? Like, that's how they get him back on Raw. So And that's a fan booking here, but who's there? Who's waiting in the wings? What I'm trying to say. And that's where NXT should be. It's your third brand, but it's also kind of your feeder system.
Right. It should be, and it really, at least ever since guys like Roman and Seth and you know, even Dean Ambrose, Jon Moxley, even though he's not there, and the ladies Sasha, Charlotte, Becky, Bailey, since them and their success, there hasn't been a whole lot for NXT call-ups. Hasn't been a whole lot of success. And we're always asking that question whenever we do this, is who's next for the champions? Because that's what you always waited for watching a pay-per-view. You're like, okay, who's next? And but there was different anticipation because you knew that there were people that could step in and fill that role. Now you ask the question, who's next? Because there is nobody that you expect that's there to fill in that role.
Because there are not multiple storylines going on where you're elevating somebody else. You know, like,
right.
You know, we're all trying to do it for a few weeks with Humberto Carrillo with Sheamus, and he lost, and he's back chasing the 24/7 title around the arena. You know, Damian Priest seems to be on the come up, and I hope. They don't fucking. I mean, dude, the dude had a huge match with Bad Bunny at WrestleMania. Then he beat The Miz and disappeared for a few weeks. But now he seems to be back. I mean, if you ask me, I think he might beat Sheamus for the United States title. I hope he does, just to have that elevation. But they need to start bringing these guys along. And it's not just him, you know. Riddle, you know, the RK Bro thing is cool, but like, let's start elevating him to another position. Like, you know, he's funny as hell. He has personality. I'm not saying these guys need to be world champion in the next year or so, but you need to start elevating these guys to something, because eventually they're going to be like, I'm not being used here. Like if they release Ricochet tomorrow, that guy could have a job anywhere he wants to be. He can go to New Japan. He can go to AEW. He can go wherever he wants, because people recognize the talent. WWE needs to start realizing, like, we have all this fucking talent. Let's start writing storylines for these people. It doesn't always have to be your world title and then there's nothing else below it. Because I can tell you right now, there's a Roman Reigns storyline with Cena that Finn Balor's in the mix with. There's Rollins and Edge and Seth. I just shrugged my shoulders because what else? You know, you have Bobby Lashley and Goldberg. You have Damian Priest and Sheamus. And you have kind of like a thing going on with RK-Bro and, you know, Riddle and Orton and Miz and Morrison. And then you also have Styles and Omos in the mix too. And then you have... Where's everybody else? You have two brands that you do drafts for specifically because you have so many guys and you're not using any of these guys. So yeah. If Adam Cole were to come up tomorrow, I'd be like, fuck, man. I wouldn't be high. I'd be excited at first, like, oh shit, Adam Cole's here. And then my next thought would be like, oh fuck.
Yeah, it would be a matter of time before you see him chasing the 24/7 title around the arena too.
Right. And he should be money, you know, and
yeah.
And what NXT is doing now, and like, I don't know, and we keep saying how NXT is a superior brand, but they're doing multiple storylines with multiple people. There are multiple storylines going on where people are being utilized, you know, and they're not, and some of them are for titles and some of them aren't. But right. Why is it that, and maybe it goes back to leadership, maybe the fact that Triple H is running NXT and that's what he's doing for his guys. And this is not disparaging Vince, but whoever is working with Vince or underneath Vince that has limited vision, and I'm not saying it's Bruce Pritchard, maybe it is or whatever, but it's like, why are we not seeing the bigger picture here? You're losing these guys where people are like, why'd we release Aleister Black? And now he's gone for however long he signed this contract, 2-3 year deal. You know, you have Andrade asking for his release and he seems to be poised to be a next breakout Latino star. You know, you have people that are just like, I'm going to bet on myself. I don't need WWE. Or you have people saying it's been a lifelong dream to work for WWE. And then I got there and I'm like, I'm good. You know, like that's terrible.
Yeah.
And it goes back to this because you bring these guys up. They have you think you have these great gimmicks and it's like, we're going to split you up or we don't know what to do with you or we're going to change your gimmick as soon as you happen or we're going to take your first name away, Cesaro, Rusev.
Oh, God, I hate it.
We're going to take your first name away. Antonio Cesaro, Alexander Rusev, and Matt Riddle are now just singular, you know? And even now, why is Tegan Knox being referred to as just Knox? Fuck you. Call for Tegan Knox. Shotzi Blackheart is just Shotzi. Like, yo, why? Why?
Yeah, it doesn't.
Somebody tell me why they're taking one part of their name away. Tegan Knox being just Knox sounds terrible, and you're setting her up for failure because she sounds like are you a woman's wrestler or are you a guy wrestler? And that's not a knock on her. That's them being stupid. Just call her Tegan Knox. That's her first name and her last name. What's the point of that?
And it's a nice name too. Tegan Knox is a nice name. Shotzi Blackheart is a cool name. Why aren't we calling her that?
Yeah. Oh, it's Shotzi and Knox. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? you're setting them up for failure already.
Yeah.
Who's going to buy a wrestling shirt for a woman's wrestler and it just says Knox on it?
Yeah. And it may sound silly, but it's really not because it's one of my pet peeves. They do it all the time and it makes no sense. They did it with Apollo Crews and they called him Crews. And then they realized how stupid it sounded and they went back to Apollo Crews.
Right.
You know, it makes no sense. And it's like, sometimes I feel like we can get to a point where everybody's going to have just their last name, where it's going to be, you know, the main event of SummerSlam is Reigns versus Cena. And that's it. No Roman Reigns. No, it's just Reigns and Cena.
Roman.
Yeah.
It's too much of a mouthful. Adrian Neville became Neville.
Yeah. Why?
Like, you know what I mean? Like, why?
Yeah.
It's too much. I don't get it. You know, I don't get that. But let them be them. And that's the thing, too. It's like, for instance, and this is totally like Cameron Grimes. I feel like they'll bring him up and change his name to just Grimes because it sounds good because it's like a beard and stuff like that. You know, L.A. Knight's going to end up being just Knight, you know, like,
yeah.
Or they may just change his name. But it's silly. But and we're joking now, obviously. But like, I could see that happening.
But that's the problem. It's like, we're joking about it, but we're joking because it could happen.
Right.
And it shouldn't happen.
But I don't get that either. Like, I still don't get it. Like, Matt Riddle has a fan base from UFC, from Evolve, and from NXT. And I guess he was going through that legal thing with what was going on with him in the courts or whatever. So they took off Matt and just made him Riddle. But the fact that you just call him Riddle, it's like, ill.
Yeah, it doesn't sound nice at all. It doesn't sound good.
It has no flow to it either.
Yeah.
It's like if you're doing an announcement for a major match, like the fact that you announce like Matt Riddle, like it flows. If you're just saying like, you know, the challenger for the United States Championship is Riddle, it's like, yuck.
Yeah, it's...
You know? And maybe they should start treating their fans, like stop treating their fans like we're fucking idiots. You know, like I know that's Matt Riddle. Just call him Matt Riddle.
And that's the biggest... I guess the biggest thing for me too, and why I have a problem with it is because we're not that stupid, you know. It's just like it's continuously insulting our intelligence, and you know we understand that this is a show and it's not real and it's fake, wrestling's fake, blah blah blah, but that doesn't mean you get to insult us every chance you get. And it's just like why are they still continuing to call Dominik Dijakovic T-Bar or Mace, whichever one he fucking is? You know, like, just go back to him being Dijakovic. What's wrong with that? Nothing.
Well, it's, I mean, for them, I'm glad that they're embracing the gimmick, like a little Mad Max 5. T-Bar was a terrible name to begin with. All right. Maybe Dijakovic, for them, it's too long. Keep it T-Bar. Whatever. You can call him anything else. But when you take a guy like Mustafa Ali and he's representing, you know, Middle Eastern culture, and the fact that he's one of your very few Middle Eastern wrestlers that you have, and you take away his name and just call him Ali, you're making him a walking stereotype. He's not even doing a stereotypical character.
Right.
Like, and then the fact that he's just like, you know, let me embrace my name, and they changed it back to Mustafa Ali. Like, let him fucking, that's his name. Let him rock with his name.
Yeah.
What's so bad about calling him Mustafa Ali? Like, if you wanted to change his name completely and want to call him Dave Jones, like, that's fucking terrible too. Then you took it away, just Ali. It's like, I don't get the thought process. I don't know if it's because they're worried about fans saying the name or people, whatever. I don't know. But I think there's a big change that needs to happen. You have all these writers and you can't write more than two storylines at a time. I'm tired of seeing the same fucking matches every week and the fact that, rather than celebrating an NXT call-up now, I'm now cringing because I'm like, yeah, they're going to blow this. That's the problem with this. And I'm glad we did this list because I feel like there's more. We could probably do two episodes of this alone if you wanted to split it between women. I feel like, you know, because if the tag teams are a shame, because I feel like tag teams suffer the most. I feel like the most successful are the women's wrestlers that come out of NXT, to be honest with you. Because, like, there's very few that I could say didn't pan out. Because if you look at the women's wrestling track record, they seem to be pretty good so far, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't really think. I mean, if you want to make the case for, like, maybe Sarah Logan and the Riot Squad, because they really haven't done anything. But they had some success as well, you know. But, like, you know, there's certain subsets of NXT. Like, I want to say namely the tag teams that they bring up, and they're like, all right, yeah, you're out. Probably the worst percentage in terms of success rate are the tag teams, probably.
Yeah, and like we said before, it just goes back to the Vince McMahon mindset of tag teams are not important. You know, it's the individual star that's important.
Right.
And
I mean, we could probably break this down for days. Because I'm thinking about it now, as the wheels are spinning, I'm thinking of, like, and I'm trying to think of a woman's wrestler who kind of came and just was dead on arrival, and I really can't, because you could have made the case for Nikki Cross, but she had a lot of success with Alexa, and she's the Raw Women's Champion right now, you know. And Bianca and Rhea doing really well. Paige is real well. I mean, you could probably make the case for maybe Emma, because she was a huge coming out of NXT, and she had this little following, but she was another, like, niche character, NXT character, and it just didn't translate to the roster.
No, and they tried.
She had the whole thing with Dana Brooke, and then she got hurt, and then they tried the
Emelina.
Yeah.
And it was so bad that they didn't even debut it. She came out and she was like, yeah, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. So whatever. I mean, and Dana Brooke seems to be finding her footing as well, but she kind of multiple gimmicks, multiple people that she's been with, you know, Titus Worldwide, Charlotte, now Mandy Rose. And so, I mean, she's still there though, where Emma, like, she kind of went back to NXT and found her footing as a heel. And then they came back and was like, this is great. Let's change you.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah, that's another one. So, you know, I'm throwing Emma on the honorable mentions list. Because when you think about, I was just trying to think of, like, maybe some women who kind of didn't work out. And she's probably number one, but I can't think of anybody else off the top of my head right now. But anyway, good talk. This is great. I dug it. I think this is something we need to explore further. I think future episodes for, I think, a breakdown of a Dynamite episode is definitely in the works there. Back to our underrated rivalries. And as soon as they release our fucking long-awaited Icons Lex Luger episode, we're definitely doing our Lex Luger coverage, I think, for sure.
Yeah, I think that'll happen at SummerSlam.
Oh, yeah, hopefully. You know, we can talk about this Lex Express, which is great. I love the music video at the end. Favorite part. Anyway, all right, let's wrap it up. Thank you, everyone. As usual, get this where you get all your wrestling podcasts. You know what it is. I'm not going to go through every single list. If you're not going there, you're going to Podomatic.com, listening to us at Wrestling Guys PC at Twitter, as usual, at Fans Perspective, FPP Show. What do you got? You got anything new down the pike here?
Well, yeah, we have episodes 1 and 2 up of our Ultimate Horror Movie Showdown, where we're comparing the years and the decades. The most recent one was part 2, so it's 1981, 1991, 2001, 2011, where we break those years down as far as like which year had the better horror movie releases. And I also dropped kind of an impromptu episode, one that I did when I was contributing the Fans Perspective podcast to a website that I used to contribute to that's no longer operational. And it was an unreleased episode that I re-released here because it's all about, I did it when Avengers Endgame came out and we talked about the future of the MCU and I predicted Kang as the big bet. So for those who watch Loki, I did. And for those who watch Loki, obviously, we all know now that Kang is indeed the next big bad for the MCU. And so I kind of dropped that just to as kind of a celebratory thing for me that I was correct in my prediction.
Wow, way to pat yourself on the back with a whole podcast. That's amazing. I'm looking forward to it, though. I actually just wrapped up Loki a couple of days ago.
I'm so excited about it, yeah.
Probably,
I can't wait.
Probably WandaVision and Loki were probably my 1-2. In terms of the Marvel shows that have come out so far, it was so good. It was really good. Tom Hiddleston, bravo. I just love how it's set up everything.
Yeah, it's going to be so much fun.
Everything. This is going to be great. And wow, I can't believe you actually predicted that it would be Kang the Conqueror over there.
Yeah.
Attaboy. Love the actor who's playing him as well. I think he did a bang up job in his little brief stint on in the finale.
Yeah.
Good stuff, and he's gonna be in Ant-Man and Ant-Man 3, which is gonna be also.
Yes, and I have a feeling we might see some of him in like Spider-Man, Doctor Strange. You know, we might just like how they kind of put in Thanos a little bit
right
before we actually got Thanos. I think they'll do the same with him too.
Well, I loved his line where it was like, "If you think I'm evil, you should wait. You should meet my variants." So I think that's where we're gonna see everything, which I think is gonna be. Amazing, yeah. Which is going to lead to, because I know they've been holding off on the Spider-Man trailer. I think they were waiting for Loki to wrap up so they could actually finally, I guess, reveal that they have all these guys coming back for this, which is bonus. So awesome. So you got a nice unreleased episode. You got the nice part 2 of their little horror thing, which you got to send me those episodes. I got to check those out. I dig them. Love the horror genre. All right, cool. So at FPP Show, Everson Guys PC, and as usual, drop us a line. Let us know. What were some NXT, I want to say fuck-ups, but some NXT botches on the main roster that we maybe overlooked or maybe missed? Or who do you think, as controversial as it is, because we did say Rusev, we did say Wyatt Family, who maybe have fairly successful ones, so we could go in those dates all day. But let us know. Let us know how you feel about that. As usual, it's been the Wrestling Guys podcast. We came to talk about wrestling and drink some coffee. And I'm out of coffee, and I'm going to bed. How you doing? Wear a mask. Wash your damn hands. Take care.